Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is new media artist and educator Tammy R. Brackett. Brackett is a graduate of Alfred University, where she received an MFA in Electronic Integrated Art from the School of Art and Design. In addition to numerous exhibits in the U.S., her work has also been shown in China, Japan, Croatia, and Hungary. She is the recipient of the College Art Association Professional Development Fellowship from the National Endowment for the Arts. Brackett is currently assistant professor and chair of digital media and animation at Alfred State College. And welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I want to ask you this. Did you start out as a traditional artist and segue into new media? How did you begin?
I was just reminded of that recently by my nieces who came into my studio, and I showed them what I was doing, and they said, "Don't you ever draw or paint anymore? And when are you going to start doing that again?" I think the foundation in the traditional arts is important for all artists, and I always go back there. I keep my sketchbooks, and I try to continue to draw, although it's difficult. But yeah, that's kind of where I started out in fine arts. Before that, I think I started out career-wise in the theater. I worked backstage for a number of years and then left that to become the girl with guitar, singer, songwriter, and do that music stint before I went back to school and settled in. I think as a media artist, I'm kind of encompassing all of those areas.
It sounds like it, yeah.
And so it's kind of nice because I don't have to make a choice of, do I do this? Do I paint? Do I draw? Do I work in sound or video? Can I actually take something apart and make something else out of it? I'm allowed to do all of those things.
Ah, so this whole creative person got to bring all this stuff together and have a little freedom, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, your work seems to call for, you know, a head that's also invested in architecture and engineering and math. I mean, some of your exhibits and installations have encompass all of those things. Are you interested in all of those things as well?
I think I'm interested in whatever is closest to me that has got my attention. And it can be anything. I married a scientist. So, you know, I started getting my hands on these images of science and this language of science. And I started questioning it from my perspective. So things that the biologists can read and fully understand, things that they can look at and they fully understand them, they know how to read them, I didn't. So I tried to take it from my perspective, and it could be the map of the human genome. When it came out in Science, you know, they came out with that. This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
As a way of showing us, proving to us that it exists, and they fully mapped it because here it is in its entirety. Now, nobody could actually sit down and read that as if it was a novel. You know, so
a scientist probably could.
I suppose they could, but even they don't work with that big, huge paper map. You know, that was something for the public. That was something for the consumers, right? So I decided to consume it as a musician. So I read it as if it were sheet music and translated it that way. So it's that kind of thing that you show me something I don't completely understand, and I'm going to try and put it in my own context.
Oh, that's really
so
interesting.
So how do I take this language that's supposed to be meaningful to me, but I can't grasp it? It's still distanced because I don't understand, you know, that I'm using air quotes, that scientific language that it's written in. So I translate it into something that I can understand.
So you translate it into your own language. Did you feel like you're constructing a whole new world with your art, or are you trying to make people see the world as they see it in a different way?
Yeah, I'm trying to raise questions, I think. And in a way, I've started creating immersive environments. So when you say, are you trying to create a whole new world? Yeah, I think lately I have been trying to do that. Large-scale projections that create these immersive environments. I just last fall had an installation that was 1, 2, 3 channels of video projected, and it was 3D. It was a 3D environment, so three-dimensional trees, and they were textured with language. So the camera would move through there, so it's as if the person in the exhibition space is moving through this forest of trees, although they're standing still.
I saw an example of that. That was really interesting.
You know, so that's kind of that, building a new environment. But the environment itself isn't saying one specific thing. It's not trying to get a message across, but it's setting up all of these possibilities, a place where you can discover these things.
And it feels like you're trying to get people to move through their familiar world and see it in different ways.
That's exactly it. I've been working a lot with language, and even when you go back to that, the genome mapping and the genome music that I did earlier, that was a way of taking language out of its position of nailing something down into a specific structure, categorizing the way that it does, and I'm trying to use it against itself in a way to kind of pull it out of these categories.
I love that. I feel like my head is expanding when somebody changes the narrative on something. I mean, that's what's so wonderful about art.
Right.
I mean,
it
really does. It explodes our heads in some way.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, those the sound for that piece is from the Peterson's Field Guide to the Birds, and it's from the old vinyl records where you would play the bird song. And that's a way that they categorize the birds, is by song. So you can tell one species from another species by what it is that they're saying. So there's that language of the birds, right? It's like a dialect. You can tell one species from the next and pull them apart and categorize them that way. So I used a lot of that in the sound and left the page numbers that it was referencing in there too, because that's just another layer of categorization. So I picked these layers and then reshuffle them. It's like pulling all the pages out of a bunch of different books and binding them all together and saying, okay, here's the story now.
I love
Read
that.
This story.
Trying to get people to look at the world, you know, in a different way that they are used to and maybe dream something out of it, it seems to me. That is wonderful. Right. You have a work called The End, and you explained that it came from your first experience with science via educational film strips.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because I remember those too.
You know, when you're an artist and you have scientist friends who are also educators, they will give you things, which is wonderful. And I also like to collect things. So one of the things I started to collect were all these old educational film strips. And I remember them from being a kid. You know, you sit in there in the dark room, and they'd have the ones that you'd advance a frame at a time. So you'd have the cassette tape that goes along with it, and you hear the beep, and you go to the next frame.
Yep.
Well, they all seem to end the same way. They have to have this indication that you've made it to the end of the film strip. There are no more frames. This is where it ends. So they put the end frame in there. And it can't just be the end text. They have to have some sort of image. So what I noticed in going through all of these the end frames is that they seem to predict some sort of doom or a call to action. You know, so they have things are exploding. You know, there's mushroom clouds. There's this question of, are we going to ruin our environment? The same questions that we ask today.
Absolutely.
But we've been asking them for quite a long time. So The End is a video. It's a single channel video piece that I put together with all of the end frames, one after the other. And they're advanced. You can hear the beeps and the bonks and the boops that advance the frames. And then the soundtrack, the rest of the soundtrack is Music to Learn Science By. It's those musical interludes where they give you some piece of information that's supposed to be some poignant information.
Oh, yeah,
and
I remember
give you the
those.
Music to think about it.
I remember. You know, they were scary, too, most of them. Things are going to change. You know, there could be a third world war.
Exactly.
You have to learn how to go to the assembly room and walk out in single file.
Right.
Or hide under the desk.
Right. They come with some propaganda.
Absolutely. Well, it almost feels like you dove from that point on to using your art to let us know that the world is going to change and it's going to continue to change. So talk to us about that philosophy. I mean, impermanence, I suppose, would be.
I'm glad you used that word, because that was something that I was actually thinking. I had to do a drive in today, and I was thinking about that impermanence. Things are always changing. And that is the nature of language. I think maybe I can go back to that, the field guide piece, in order to talk about that and the way that works. The text that textures these trees that the viewer can read is from the Philosophy of Science. It's from a journal that was started in 1935, I believe, and where it's a place for scientists and philosophers to come together and talk, which, you know, maybe they normally wouldn't.
I would think they probably wouldn't.
You know,
they'd argue.
Two things that you think shouldn't be able to have a conversation. And the library was throwing these things out. So, of course, my scientist educator friend said, hey, look at all this stuff. What can you do with it? So I had them. I didn't know what to do with them. other than I was fascinated to read the stuff that I couldn't understand. Mm. I could get a little bit of here and there, but I got just enough that it made me start to think and put things together myself. So, and every time I read them, I get something else out. So it's like this ever-changing understanding from this static text. So as the viewer is in this forest of trees with all of this text from this book, they're allowed to realign the pages because the leaves that the text are on will float one in front of the other. So it's a bit like magnetic poetry. Oh. So the text is constantly rearranging itself as you move through that space.
Wow.
So it depends on your context, where you are in space, and your relationship to what is next to you. What happens when you put science and philosophy together?
And does the viewer that's watching this have any kind of control over flipping the leaves or changing the...
No, in what they have control over is essentially where they're looking, because you're not getting just one snippet of text at a time. You're kind of in this forest. So you could be in the same room watching the same... It's on a loop, but you can be in there over and over again, and every time it happens, it'll be that rearranged text.
Ah.
So one time you may see it in this order, another time you'll see it in that order. And I have fun writing my own poetry from it. So I'll sit there and watch it, and I'll just write the words that I see, and they'll be in a new order. And then reading that as if that's creating some sort of poetry.
Wow.
And I think this where the, you know, that's where the meaning is. It's kind of, it's not in the actual static text. It's in the in-between, what you read between the lines,
uh-huh,
that we can come to some new understanding.
I want to ask you, Oscar, where do some of your ideas come from? What's just some of these ideas, besides science? Are you like a painter? Sometimes you'll just see a scene or hear a word? Or
yeah, in part, I think it's something that I experience that I can't stop thinking about. It's not a concrete idea. It's not a fully formed, this is what I'm going to do. It's, I'm really interested in that, so I'm going to pay more attention to it. I can't stop looking at that. Every day I have to go back and see how that's changed. Recently we moved, I say recently, this has got to be 5-6 years ago, we moved out to the middle of nowhere,
mm,
this fantastic place where we have woods behind us. And I didn't have a formal studio. I had a spare bedroom that faced the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fantastic because I'd go in there and I would sit down at my computer to work and I'd look out the window and I'd see all kinds of things happening out there. So one of the things that I kept seeing over and over again was this pileated woodpecker that would show up in the same place over and over again. I'm thinking, what is going on out there? So I had to go out and investigate where this woodpecker was going. Well, it was boring these, you know, these huge holes that it can make in the trees.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kept saying to people, I'd take pictures of them, send them out, he's going to take down that tree. This is going to happen. This tree's going to... They're like, no, no, no. Those trees are very, very strong. It's not going to happen. I'm like, I'm not so sure. So I ordered 200 feet of cable, and I set up a computer in my studio to record. It was running a program so that it would record over a certain decibel level.
Ah.
Ran that cable out to that tree and put a contact microphone, wedged it into the wood of the tree. So I could hear in my studio really well this woodpecker just knocking on that tree. And I figured, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I want to see if I can maybe hear the tree changing over time. And if the tree does fall down, I want to hear it, even if I'm not there. So it did happen eventually. I recorded the tree, and it fell, and I heard the sound of the tree change, and I heard it fall.
Wow, that is fascinating. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tammy Brackett. She's a new media artist and educator. I want to ask you, do you feel like when you see and think about an idea that you're totally interested in and sort of obsessed with, are you trying to deconstruct what's happening or create something around it? I don't quite understand where these ideas come from.
I don't either. Truly, I don't either. And I don't know that I can really nail it down. It's not about having the idea or generating the idea or deciding I'm interested in this, so I'm going to explore this about it. It's something that you come across that you can't get away from.
Mm.
It's almost an obsession, almost, that you just can't stop thinking about that thing. What is it about that? Like, for instance, the idea that there is a gene, a tumor suppressor gene, that you could have that potentially would keep you from developing cancer.
Mm.
And like, what is that about? So genes, how do we look at them? We see them through these sequences. So genetic code, we're looking at letters, basically, in a sequence. It's almost like some cryptic kind of...
New language, almost.
New language, like recipe, kind of incantation. How do I call this up in a form that... How do I use this not as a non-geneticist from the outside? You know, this is kind of the spooky, magical thing. Can mm-hmm. I get to it somehow? So I took one of these sequences for the tumor suppressor gene, and where it had all of the letters indicating the different proteins, I assigned them all colors. And then I went to Joann Fabrics online and ordered all the different colored, like 20 different colored fabrics, and laid them out in little squares in the sequence of those letters and quilted them all together.
Wow.
So I ended up with a quilt that has the sequence of a tumor suppressor gene in it. So, you know, this idea that you have this thing that you pass down from generation to generation, much like in my family we do with quilts.
Uh-huh. So,
and there's this tradition of quilting that I wanted to carry on from my grandmother. And the same thing with your genetics. You know, this is the kind of thing that you can pass down from generation to generation. So I think it's questioning things. Where it comes from is a questioning of something. You know, how can this possibly be of use to me? How do I relate it to me in my context, you know?
Yeah. So you're conjuring up kind of magic to explain the world even to yourself.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to talk about dog tag. Dog tags, I guess it was called.
Piece.
It's another work that takes on science. To tell us about that. It's along the same lines as what we've been talking about.
Boy, that's a piece from a while ago, and I haven't thought about it in a while, but I really love that piece. I think, not to toot my own horn, but I think it's smart. I think it's some of the smart work that I've done. And again, it comes from people handing me things. There were these acrylamide gels that they use in a microbiology lab to visualize things, so you can like see proteins and things that you can visualize things that are otherwise invisible. For instance, your actual DNA. So somebody had left these sitting around in the lab, and they had dehydrated, and they became these little plastic chips.
Oh,
they were interesting to look at. So they were sent home for me to see. Here, do something with this. It's kind of a challenge, you know. What would you do with this dehydrated piece of acrylamide, you know? I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. What do you use these for? Oh, for visualizing, you know. I said, well, can you see DNA on them? Can you see pieces of somebody's genetics on there? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I have an idea. This is about the time of 9/11. You know, when the towers collapsed, I was reading all of this stuff about identifying the victims, you know, and they were doing it through genetics.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually, their genetics were mixed together in a way, you know, under all of that pressure in a way that pulling them apart was a complicated process. And that's one of those things. I started thinking about that, you know. That's not an idea, but it's a thing that is like, how do you wrap your head around that?
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same time, we're talking about entering into a war. I think it's the identifying the individual in the collective was something that I was very much interested in at that time. I think questioning kind of where I was during that time in my life as an individual, as part of a larger thing. So I did that. I got my own DNA, and I wanted to visualize it on these dog tags. But I wanted a piece that was of my DNA, came from me as an individual, but a piece that everybody had.
Mm.
Because we're 99.9
connected.
You know, we're the same.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
just this tiny little part of us that's different. I wanted that piece. So that's what I got. And I put that sequence on these dog tags, and they just pulled it in so that you could see it. And so each of these, they hang on the little ball chains as if they're dog tags, and there's two of these dehydrated acrylamide dog tags that have my DNA in them, but it's a piece of my DNA that's common to everyone. So
the universal connection.
Right.
In many
so
ways.
I became part of the whole.
Wow, that is really fascinating where your head goes. Well, you know, unlike a painter who can just pick up a brush when he or she has an idea, mm-hmm. how long does it take you to have these ideas reach fruition? I mean, you seem to have to probably get a lot of people involved.
Sometimes I do have to get a lot of people involved. Recently, I've been being told that, you know, being an artist seems like it's a study in materials. And sometimes it is.
Yeah.
You know, some of the things that I'm working on now, I became interested in growing my own food and harvesting my own food, and learning to hunt was one of those things. So I spend so much time doing that and thinking about that, that that's the, I'm thinking, where is this in my work? Obviously, this is going to come up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So a materials research project is learning how to tan deer hides.
Really?
Because you don't, you know, you have the meat, you have the hide, you don't want it to go to waste. What do you do with it? So those are becoming projection screens for me. And part of it is just being out there and doing things. I think it's spending time in the studio, but also spending time when you're outside the studio doing other things, realizing that you're still working.
Ah.
And it's great. It's like one of those jobs that I get paid for, not that I get paid for this, but, you know.
But it's also using all this organic material and not letting it just go into the atmosphere and disappear.
Exactly. And part of it comes back to that issue of identity and place, and me exploring the place where I live and thinking about the history of the place. It didn't make it as farmland. A lot of it is now state forest.
Yeah.
The land is not very conducive to growing things other than clay pots. It's very good at growing clay.
And growing art.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What, to tell us how the high-tech world has changed art. I mean, obviously it has affected what kind of an artist you are.
It has. And I think that's part of me being out in the woods and spending some time out there learning to hunt. Honestly, was probably just an excuse to go sit in the woods away from a screen so that I could focus my eyes at a greater distance and learn what kind of trees I had growing on my own land. I think it's important to get outside. When I come into it might seem silly to say this, but when I came into Ithaca, I was so overwhelmed with the number of people and the amount of buildings and the cars and the constant energy that I can get also online. You know, it's the same kind of thing. Ads are popping up, this glowing screen. It's like it's a digital cacophony of the sort that you would experience in the city. And I think it's important to be able to get away from that every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So the struggle now, and I have this struggle with my students quite often when I'm teaching, is to get away from that screen and realizing that there's nothing that you can make there without experiencing something outside of that space.
But technology is the nucleus of your art, isn't it?
I don't know that it is.
Really?
I think that it's a tool.
Because I would think somebody who's a new media artist, I always think of technology, electronics,
right.
You know, not being tied to the forest and the trees.
Right.
So that's very interesting that you're trying to meld the two.
I remember when I was an undergrad and I was in an artist lecture and somebody asks a question of the artist who had just presented, and it was a ceramic artist. And the question was, why do you make work in ceramics? You know, why are you creating this particular work using ceramics? And I remember thinking at the time as a young, naive artist, thinking, well, because they're a ceramic artist, duh, that's their material. And as I went through many more years of school after that, I started to realize that the material should be suited to what it is that you're exploring.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I won't go out and build a building because I'm really not good at that. I don't know the first thing about it. So I'm more likely to work in video and sound and animation, things like that, because I know a little more about them. But then at the same time, I don't know much about doing lab work, yet I will hook up with a scientist and go into a lab and get my own DNA to a point where I can see it, you know. I'm pretty good at pipetting, they tell me.
Well, I think people should, you know, bring all these arts and sciences and humanities together. You know, I'm all for that. I think it's really important so that we're not alienated from each other.
Right.
Do you think this new art installation, sound, video is going to last the way we still see paintings from Rembrandt from many, many centuries ago?
That's the big question. It's certainly the big question for a lot of institutions that may purchase the work or, you know, for their collection, mm-hmm. and how do you keep it updated?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same problem that artists have, you know, that they have to keep up to date on ways of making it, up to date with the technology. But then if you sell it, do you sell it with the technology,
mm-hmm.
you know? Friends of mine have joked about the archival potentiometer, you know. How do you know that the knob isn't going to wear out eventually from something?
And then we've gone from, you know, 8-track tapes to, you know, to digital. recording now, so it's changed so much.
Yeah. I think it's a huge concern. I think that we'll have this problem more and more in the future.
So you don't think current art is meant to be like a tweet? It just goes into cyberspace and it's just there for the moment for people to see in the here and now.
It could be. I think that if you're making something that it's important, that it's timeless, you have to think about that from the beginning. Can't all be pottery to be dug up years later, you know, in a way that you can kind of put it back together and see it for what it originally was. Unfortunately, it's not going to... Or fortunately, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's one of my concerns, because I so love art, and I hate the thought that a lot of the stuff that people are doing in 21st century is going to disappear.
Right.
You have a more recent piece called Game Over, which I find really interesting. It explores the effects of the environment and what humanity is doing to the environment. Talk to us about that.
Years ago, I had this weird idea of creating what the spider goat looked like, which was the goat that was manipulated with the protein that produces spider silk, you know, to be able to produce that in their milk. And I thought, well, and it was in the news. They were actually, I don't know if they still are or not, but they were actually creating these goats that you could do that with, these genetically manipulated goats. And so I started thinking, well, what would a spider goat look like as kind of a B-movie, science fiction B-movie animal, right? So I created my rutabago, which is a combination of a rutabaga and a winnebago. And where that came from, I don't really know. I think maybe I was trying to say rutabaga, said rutabago at some point, and
were you trying to show how we have changed the environment and sort of perverted things?
It is kind of perverted when you think, well, what is a rutabaga? Rutabaga is the thing that you grow and you eat, and it's a food source, right? It grows in fields, and we're doing this industrial farming, and we grow a lot of rutabagas, right? And a winnebago, that's our American car culture, you know, driving across this landscape, past these fields of rutabagas, you know, through these farming fields. It references, I think, the time period of those scientific film strips of the American car culture where everybody started driving. Mm. You know, this is a good idea, so let's just do more of this.
Yeah.
So it's referencing that, only the rutabagas get a little out of control. and that's the story of that piece.
We're almost out of time, Tammy. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us really briefly what you might be working on right now?
What I'm working on right now is, and I alluded to it earlier, I'm doing some things with tanning deer hides.
So that's the current work.
Yeah, that's the current work. And I'm working with that, taking off from where I left off with the field guide piece, referencing the landscape and that constantly changing way of categorizing things and understanding your place and context, and sound work also. So not saying too much about it, I am experimenting with deer hides and speakers. So we'll see. I want to see if I can put those two things together.
Wow, we will look forward to whatever comes out of your amazing imagination. Do you have any contact information, a website people can go to?
Yes, whitedogrecords.com is where you can find my work and a few other things.
Great. Well, Tammy Brackett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.